The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. If you, like the rest of America, are looking to move down here to the Tampa Bay area in Florida and you want to work with a realtor who knows the area well, then make sure you reach out to Ann at West Florida Real Estate. Ann has sold over 350 homes here in the Bay Area over the last 6 years. She's smart, she's lived in the area for 16 years, and you won't find anyone around with a better work ethic. Reach out to her at Ann with an E at westfloridarealestate.com and let her know you heard about her here on Everyone Loves Guitar. That's Ann with an E at westfloridarealestate.com. For information on advertising, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. And if you're enjoying the show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. I want to do a real quick message. I just want to say thank you to a listener, Joe Holsworth from Strato Blogster Guitar Blog, who just gave me some information, just a modification of my Facebook account, and I appreciate that. And I also want to thank Paul Pigott for making today's interview possible by introducing me to my guest. My guest is one of the most unique and beautiful players that I've had. He does something incredibly unique. It's a great fusion of Latin, blues, and surf music, and he's just an incredible player, man. And you will hear nobody with cleaner notes than Diego Garcia, who's my guest today, who also goes by El Twanguero. So let's get into this. Let me give you his background. He's originally from Spain, and actually he's talking to me from Spain right now. Imagine like when we were little kids, you didn't think we'd be able to talk to you from Spain and Tampa, did you? He's toured all over the world with his El Twanguero act, which is a Latin twang music and style, which really has its roots in Mexico, called Pachuco, and it comes from Spanish guitar, American folk, flamenco, and tango, and also finger picking. I mean, this guy is really super talented. He studied classical music. It's very unique, with origins in old school subculture of Latino Americans from the 30s to the 50s, associated with zoot suits and vibrant, flamboyant nightlife. Diego has a zoot suit on right now. No, I'm just kidding. He's released 4 solo albums. They're called Octopus, Twanguero, The Brooklyn Sessions, which I was just listening to before I got on this interview, which is great, Argentina's Songbook, and his newest album is called Electric Sunset. It is really, really good. He's won many awards, including a Goya nomination and a Latin Grammy. He started studying at, check this out, age 6. He entered the Conservatory of Valencia in Spain. He became a student of Jose Lázaro Vilhena, Vilhena? Say his last name. I'm sorry.
Vilhena.
Vilhena. And Vienna was a former student of Segovia. At 13, Diego formed his first rock band, the Beboppers, and at 16, he joined the Rockin' Boards European Tour for the next 3 years. This is at 16. He's a pioneer of Western swing and ragtime in Spain. He formed a band called the Galloping Guitars. At 15, he was already at the top of the Valencian musical scene, and he was awarded Best Instrumentalist in the Black Note of Valencia. Check, that was 15 years old. That's phenomenal. At 20, he moved to Madrid and he became one of the most active musicians in the city. During that time, he recorded with loads of people playing sessions and he toured on a lot of different acts. I didn't bother putting the names in because they're all Spanish acts over in Spain. I didn't think most people listening to this would know them. But in 2006, he traveled to New York where he formed the Diego Garcia Trio with Tony Mason on drums. He played drums for Norah Jones, Bo Diddley, and Steve Cropper, and Nick D'Amato on bass. He played bass for Liz Wright and Papa Chubby, who's coming on the show soon, actually. And they played around New York and New Jersey. He made his third album there, Brooklyn Sessions, while playing with guitarists like Jim Campolongo, who I had on this show, Charlie Hunter, who I also had on the show, and Yerba Buena. Since then, he's played in Madrid again, Argentina, and they actually made a documentary about his life called Twangaro. And again, and if you listeners, if you're listening to this and if you know Paul Pigott, Diego, is it fair to say you're the Spanish version of Paul Pigott?
Well, probably. Yeah. He's my American, my Canadian brother, I would say. We have a lot of things in common. I will tell you later the story how we met in Mexico.
Cool. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been really looking forward to this. You're a great player. You started studying with some heavy classical players at age 6 in Valencia, and that's so young. Were you like a prodigy, or how did this come about?
I wouldn't say that I was a prodigy, but I was in love with the guitar. The first time, my father had the Shadows vinyl, and I saw a red Stratocaster. So my first contact with the guitar was visual. But I think I was born to play guitar, and I love guitar and I hate guitar at the same time. But it was natural for me to identify when I was 5 years old just the guitar. When I listen to the Beatles, that's weird, no? But I just concentrate on the guitar sound. So I think I was like kind of prepared when I was 6-7 years old. And in Spain, man, Spain is a very guitarist country, you know. It's a cheap instrument. It's a mid-low class instrument, and everybody has a guitar. So,
but let me ask you this. To be that disciplined at that young of an age, that's not very common.
No, but I don't know. Maybe because I didn't have a easy childhood. You know, I was born in a very dangerous hood, barrio. So my mother, she preferred me to be at home playing, studying guitar, okay, rather than being taking risk of, you know, and drugs and fights in the street and whatever. So me and my brother, we used to study a lot. And my mother encouraged us all the time.
That's cool. How did your parents think to even like enroll you in these schools? Were they musical, or they had musical education or background, or?
No, they didn't. But my father, he's a musical lover, guitar lover. My mother, her father, my grandfather, is a violin player, a professional. He's 96, now retired, but he was a professional violin. So yeah, we had. My mother loved the guitar, and obviously my father didn't want me to be a guitarist, but he convinced himself the first time he came to see me play with my band, and they support me really good.
That's cool.
I had a good support from my parents.
That's the number one thing that good guitar players have in common, to be honest with you. And I've interviewed close to 400 people now, and family support is the number one thing that everybody has in common. Maybe 99, almost 100%. Yeah. So at 20, you moved to Madrid. What prompted that move?
I mean, in part because I am a nomad. Like a nomad. But in the other part, when you start playing good, you want to work. You want to have gigs. You want to have you want a record. And in Spain, Madrid is like the most important city when everything happened. No? So it was a natural trip movement, no? From the coast, from Valencia, which is a very multicultural city, I would say. In Valencia, musically speaking, is very, very interesting. But yeah, it was natural to go to Madrid. It's a 6 million people city, so okay. We have a lot of things happening, and all the Latin acts in the world, Madrid is like the main plaza de toros, no? Like it's the main place, no? Yeah. For all the Mexican. So that opened me, yeah, a lot. You know, for all the Spanish speaking countries, Madrid was the city at that moment.
But then you moved to New York, man. That's a giant move. What? How did that come about?
No, I never think about I never plan anything. No, I remember I was married at that time with my first wife. So, and no, she was a super nice girl.
We don't call it a first wife here. We call it a starter wife.
Okay, a starter wife.
Or a test wife.
Or a test wife. But test, I was 12 years married, so it was a long test.
That's a long test. Yeah.
She was beautiful. She's beautiful still. We are very close friends. But at that time, I finished a really, really long tour, and we had some money, no? And we say, why don't we take a year, a sabbatical, no? Sabbatical year.
Yeah.
And then we moved. Yeah, and we didn't go to America for the American dream or whatever. We just went with money because I had some money.
Just to hang out.
Yeah, and work also because I can't be on vacations, no? Mm-hmm. So for me, a sabbatical year is like bringing my guitars and start working the second day that I'm in New York. And I work, I'm a workaholic.
You know? I hear you, man.
But we were very relaxed at that time, no? And it was a really good experience. But at the same time, I think I wasn't prepared at that time. I was 27, 28. I wasn't prepared. The experience was good, but the city can eat you in one way, no? So that's why now I moved to LA at 40. I'm 42. I'm 40. So I was more prepared, no? Now I'm more confident. I have more self-confidence in some things that I hadn't when I was 28.
Yeah, I think that's everybody's, you know, it's funny. I have two sons, and one's 28, one's 26, and I see them. My little one talked to me this morning, and he was asking me things. And I was talking to my wife. I said, you know, I wish he had a little more confidence, but that's going to come in time. You know, because after you got to get beat up a little bit, then you sort of get it. You know, unfortunately, there's no way, you know, you just can't buy confidence on the shelf, you know.
But you are their parents. So even if they are 27, 20, it's your kids, no?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
It's my kid. Like,
absolutely.
But yeah, I don't remember. But I think I was pretty adult, 27, 28. Yeah, I was married by I was playing guitar by myself. But, life gives you good, bad things, lessons all the time, no?
Yeah.
And that's that's a good thing of aging, no?
Yes.
Getting older.
So. Yeah, I think so.
The lessons, man, you have. And now I think I'm more prepared to do, I've been practicing all my life, no? Going to Mexico, going to Buenos Aires, I'm trained. I'm in shape, no?
Oh, hell yeah. How did you start getting gigs when you got to the city, when you got to New York?
I went to some jam sessions at, where was that place? Jules, it was a French, in Lower East Side, and Living Room. Living Room where Gene Campilongo used to play.
Right, right.
I went to some jam sessions and I had some contacts before. I had some contacts, some friends playing there, living in New Jersey. It was easy, to get, I mean, in 2 months, almost every every guy in town knew about the, you're the Spaniard? Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. And you, I'm assuming you spoke English back then as well, like when you went over there?
No. I learned.
Holy shit.
Yeah, but listening, my English is very bad, but my ear is very good.
Yeah. Wow. So you, I mean, that's a place where if you don't know English, it's not a problem. But you went, that's a lot of courage, man. It took to go to another country where you don't even speak the language.
I think that this is my best thing. I'm kind of brave, no? Like,
no, okay, seriously, listen. That's like pretty, that's courageous.
Yeah, well, it's when you go out from your own, how you say, comfort zone, no?
Yeah, comfort zone.
It's pretty interesting to live that feeling, no? To feel that thing, like, oh my God. No, but as you said, I mean, New York, you can just speak Spanish and there's no problem. Everybody's going to understand.
Yeah.
But no, but for me, it's like knowing a language is knowing more from human being, a different language. No?
Yeah.
So it was funny at the beginning. I went to take some lessons with all Chinese and Turkish and Turkish people, and it was so weird.
What, guitar lessons?
No, just English lessons.
You took English lessons from people who didn't speak English?
And I went to 2-3 classes and I left. I said, okay, let's do it in the street, man.
Yeah. That's cool, man. I give you credit. That's a lot of balls, man. But then you left after a few years. What made you leave?
I had an offer for a very, very South America tour. And I don't remember. We decided to go back. Like we were married at the time and said, my ex-wife said, hey, let's go back to Spain. I said, okay, why not? And I was actually, I went back to Spain, but I started a 6-month tour from Mexico to Argentina. And I've been traveling almost all my life, no? And it was a natural movement to come back to Madrid.
Well, plus I'm assuming your wife was probably a lot more comfortable. Like if you're gone so much and traveling, she probably.
Yeah, wanted to be close.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Family. Yeah, and I understood at that time.
Sure. What you mentioned that you grew up in the hood. What kind of jobs did your parents have?
Well, my father worked in telephone company, national telephone company, and my mother, she was a mother of four. So that's
oh my God! Wow, big family.
That's a good job. But she had some part-time, I remember in the 80s. Yeah, man, life was really hard in Spain in the 80s. And she had some part-time. She worked in a library for a while. But we were four kids, man. That's
a crazy amount of work, man.
that's a crazy work.
Yeah. I think being a mom is honestly one of the toughest jobs around. I've seen my wife. It's like, I couldn't totally do that. I definitely couldn't do that.
Yeah, man. Women, man, we are different, no? They had some powers.
Yeah.
That we can't imagine.
No, for sure,
just
man.
Just can't imagine.
Absolutely. So, let me ask you. So you studied classical at a very high level, but when did you and how did you get into the twangy guitar stuff?
I think from the beginning because, my father had a collection of Ventures, Shadows, and we used to listen to it a lot when I was a kid, and I play air guitar. Yeah. So, yeah, I think when I had my first electric guitar at 11, 12, I was straight to the bridge. Like, no. I wanted to play, that funny thing, you know. But getting into the classical guitar was good because I learned that you need some kind of discipline.
Mm.
And that was a classical thing.
you can learn discipline, man. You have to work hard.
Yeah, very much.
No, it's not just I'm a rock star or just a pose or whatever. Guitar is a very hard thing. So classical was good for me.
Do you think the training you had in classical is one of the reasons why your notes, you know, are? I keep saying your playing is clear. I feel like I'm not doing a good job defining it. So when I say Diego's playing is clear, it's just like every note gets a shot, man. You don't. It's really listening to your playing. I was able to suddenly realize, wow, this is the clarity of each note. I had not heard that before. And I'm not taking away from anybody that I've spoken to, but that's your like fucking musical superpower, man. You know, do you think that comes from the classical training or is that just something you?
I think probably it comes from the classical training because in classical is you get trained to be a performer. No? Or not a composer, but a performer, and you can be working on a piece for 3 months, or even in 1 year, in just 3 pieces, no? Mm. And they work a lot in one note. No, it's a thing. No, move here. Ping, that's the sound. Okay, so
okay.
I learned, to be so specific, no?
Yes,
and that's the classical training for sure. Probably if I didn't have classical training, I could be a good guitarist also. I mean, you have tons of guitarists in America, especially, you know? The flamenco guitarists, they didn't have a formal training, but they're pretty clean.
Yeah, also, it's really, like I said, it's a very, really noticeable. Was it an issue with your classical teachers or your family that you had studied this classical stuff and you really wanted to play cool rock music instead?
It was a problem. I was supposed to be a classical prodigy, as you mentioned. Yeah, but I don't know. I think they eventually understood that my heart was in rock and roll. No, I mean when you're you're a father.
Yeah.
When you're a father, you think different from your kids. And I accepted, no? But at the beginning, it was a problem. They want me to be a classical and a teacher, maybe in the conservatory or like something more formal, no? But I'm a rocker.
Yeah. I think you learn as a dad early on not to have expectations of your kids because you realize that, at least me, like I can't control them.
Yeah.
You know, am I going to do? I want them to do a certain thing or that's not my business.
You can guide them.
Right. But ultimately I have no control and I'm pretty good with that. I'd rather just give them encouragement to hopefully they, you know, make some good decisions, but yeah, you can't do anything like that. So when you first started playing professionally, what were some of the surprises about the business end of being a professional musician?
Surprises, you mean good or bad surprises?
Either one. Well, like you said to me a few minutes ago before we started the interview, you said, hey, there's so many other things you need to do related to running the business of being a guitar player, but all I want to do is play guitar. And I think most musicians are the same way. So what were the things that like surprised you about the business end? And again, it could be good or bad.
A lot. I mean, the way managers treat musicians, no, that's something like you're not prepared to. No, because when you are a teenager, you play guitar just for love. For love to the guitar or for love to the girls or love. But when you get to professional thing and you start seeing the way people try the way people the managers, man, especially
in what way
bad, oh, like no respect. And I was like, oh my god, I've been studying all my life and that's something hard to understand. No, sometimes artists are treating bad.
Well, you're paying the manager too. That's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, cash is flowing that way, so I don't get that.
But it took me some time to understand this thing. Now I am the boss and I hire my manager.
Okay.
But at that time, and now I pay 20% or 10% to my managers, but I say what to do.
Yeah.
But at that time, when I was 15, 16 years old,
okay.
I said, wow, why this manager is treating us so bad? Why? We are the artists. And that took me some time. But that was one of the bad things, bad surprises. But no, mostly everything is, I can't complain.
Yeah.
Of my musical career. No, I didn't have nothing especially bad or no.
Were there any low points or like big challenges you had to deal with over your career, whether it's personal, music, business? How did you get through those challenges?
All the time. All the time. And especially when I started being a musician, a touring musician, we're not an artist, but when I had to switch to being the boss, that was a challenge for me, no? To form a band, to get the good vibe in the band, to be, you don't have to be the boss, but you have to be like the captain of the boat.
Yeah, the leader.
The leader, but the leader, someone who people wants to play with, no?
Sure, man.
I think that was my challenge to. Yeah.
So when you first became an artist yourself, as instead of being a sideman, you didn't realize how many moving parts there were? How many things?
No, I knew because I when I was playing with another artist, older, 10 years, 15 years older than me, and famous artist, I was looking and say, oh my God, that's, I want to be like this guy, for example. No, I learned from them a lot. So I knew it was hard, and I was kind of prepared, I would say, because I started very late with my own project. I was professionally just 124/7 dedicated to my project 5-6 years ago.
Right, yeah.
So I was 35, 36 years old. I was already, I think I was prepared to manage all the problems, no? With being an artist.
But you know, I'm just trying, because you said that I thought you said that when you became a band leader, what was specifically challenging about it?
Organization.
Okay. Yeah.
The other things that are not music, because music is easy for us, but yeah, organization and you know, managing, getting people happy all the time. I mean, your people, no? My drummer, my bass player, no, he has another offer. Oh my God, I need to find another bass player. That kind of things. Yeah, that kind of things. But no, normal things.
So putting the team together was
yeah. Yeah. I think putting it together and keeping the,
yeah, man,
the team together. And I have a band in here in Spain. I have a band in LA. I remember 10 years ago, no, when I started, I had a band in Argentina, another in Spain, and another in Mexico.
Holy
that shit. Was crazy. Yeah, because I couldn't afford to move 3-4 guys from Buenos Aires to Europe. So I had to hire 3 different bands to be in playing North America, South America, and Spain. And that was crazy. I think in some way I started to play solo because of that. I said, man, let's do 1-2 years just solo. No, because if I go solo, it's like a vacation for me.
Yeah, I can understand that. So when you do solo, what are you playing? Are you playing electric, or is there like a track, a click track, or a loop or pedals, or what do you got? Just you?
No, yeah, just me. I started to do some electric and loop things about 15 years ago, but I decided that I should keep it simple. Just one guitar. And I think I have a really, really good, I mean, it's not good. I have to say that I have a really good show solo. Been playing a lot for years, and I have a record that I released last year, just one guitar. I use a pedal like a Stompbox, you know, like a kick drum. But no, mainly it's just guitar, more finger style oriented guitar, but also Latin tango and some flamenco also. So, but I think I have a really, really good show, just because playing solo is hard.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's really hard.
And keeping a show like 1.5 hours, it's hard. But for me, it's more a musical trip, the way I design the show. No? It's like, yeah, we start in Spain, we go to Chicago, and I talk about where we are going. So that keeps the people attention, not just guitarists, not just guitar players, but general people. No?
Yeah. So you talk a lot, you interact a lot with the audience.
I don't talk a lot, but I try to make a concept show. No, like a musical trip, and yeah, and I talk about when I was in Brazil. It's like kind of instructional show, but not for guitarists. More like an anthropology,
like thing. Biographical in nature.
Yeah, and like, social.
Yeah,
and social because for me the music from the streets is where my music comes, or my guitar play comes, and my solo show, it's called Backroads, and it's a trip. It's basically from Chicago to Patagonia, and last station is Spain.
It's interesting because you grew up super disciplined. Your music is really when you're doing the Twangaro stuff, your music is really like right in your face. I mean that in a good way. And your character is so laid back.
Yeah. Well, now I'm tired. We did 6 gigs last week.
You're easy going. You're very easy. Like even last time we first talked to set this up, you're like very easy going, very happy go lucky sort of guy.
I am. I'm kind of nervous. Huh?
Yeah. Oh, that's okay.
Workaholic, and no, but yeah, I've been traveling a lot, man. I've been around, and you put yourself in some situations that you have to be easygoing.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, I don't have any truth. I wanna see the truth in other people's eyes. You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand it because I'm kind of the same way. When it comes to my work, I'm really very focused, very serious about anything I'm doing. And I don't mess around, but I think people would say I'm easy to deal with outside of that. Like I'm not like intense outside of work, you know?
Yeah.
So I understand that, but it's interesting when seeing somebody else like that, I know how demanding and how focused you have had to be. You know, you don't develop this kind of talent and the precision that you play with. It doesn't just magically happen. I know how much was involved in putting that together. And I know how much is ongoing to keep it together, you know? So yeah. It's tough. And let's talk about gear for a few minutes. You got some beautiful like Gibsons and like hollow bodies. What's your number one guitar that you like playing right now? And what other two would round out your top three?
My number one is my Gibson 295. Yeah, I would say that, 295. But in Europe, because I don't travel with guitars anymore. I have guitars in Europe and guitars in the U.S. No, so and in the U.S. I just bought a 64 Stratocaster.
Oh wow!
Seriously, that's my number one now. Oh my God! Yeah.
What is a 295?
The 295, it's the gold top Gibson with Bixby hollow body, same size like 175. Scotty Moore, you know, remember Scotty Moore?
Yes.
That Gibson, that rockabilly.
Okay.
P90s.
Right. So that's the guitar you're playing on when you go to your website, the video with you and the girl.
Yeah.
Dude, that is a badass guitar. It sounds great. Wow.
It's got, and I don't use pedals. I don't use,
no,
I don't have no effect, but just a little bit of reverb from my Princeton. And I keep it simple because I travel a lot. So yeah. In a moment, I realized that, I mean, I don't want to carry three pedals, a volume pedal, just by me to play in Colombia. And next gig, we are playing in Morocco. No, man, if I'm touring the world all the year, I want to keep it simple, just one guitar. And now I travel without guitars because I have a Gibson endorsement. So when I go to, if I go to London, I can ask them for a 295 and I'm free now, man. I'm 42 years
good
old.
Good for you. What year is that 295 you have?
No, this is an 80s. It's an 80s. It's just not very, very, very old, but it's a really good guitar.
Beautiful guitar, man. I love that guitar sound, man. When I saw that video, I was like, holy shit. Okay. So then you got your 64 Strat. What color? What kind?
It's Olympic white.
With a maple or rosewood?
It's Olympic white, all original. Wow, man, it was the guitar of my dreams.
Really?
And I'm not a really, really Stratocaster guy, but I'm working on some new sounds with the Wami Bar. I'm trying to emulate like steel guitar sound, no?
Yeah.
I'm playing more really twangy sound. It's interesting. Now I'm into the Stratocaster. I don't know. I'm switching all the time. I think it's not the guitar. It's just your soul and your brain. No.
What's interesting, though, how much of a twang you get out of Gibsons. That's what's unusual, because most people that are playing twang are playing Tele or they're playing Strat. But you're playing – I've seen you play a lot of Gibsons, and it's like I've always thought them. Like, how the hell is he – how do you get that? Is there something like – that you're unique that you're doing when you're playing a Gibson to get a twang? Like, what pickup do you play on? And
I could do twang even in a Spanish guitar, whatever guitar you give me. I'm sure. Yeah. I don't know. It's not the pick. I pick a very heavy. I play a very heavy pick, you know, like 2 millimeters. I don't know how it's.
Oh, wow. That's.
But it's like a stone.
That's like a stone. Super thick. Holy crap.
Yeah. And I use 12s, 56.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow. Are you a big guy? Are you tall?
I'm not very, very tall, but normal. How was to say 1 meter, 80, 6 feet would be in American.
Wow, that's a 2 millimeter no, pick and 12s. Holy shit.
You have to be in shape to play with a... But it's more a position in the right hand. I mean, this is the right hand is the secret of the guitar, of flamenco, finger style, of bossa nova, or tango, or country, or no, it's the right hand. So I think I developed the sound, and I can play it in every guitar in the world. Yeah.
When you play twang, do you play with your fingers close? Because a lot of people who play with that, they keep their hand close to the bridge, way back. Is that what you do, or does it not matter for you?
No, it's pretty close to the bridge, but I can do twang with my nails. Actually, in flamenco, there is a technique called alzapúa. It gets made with the thumb, and it's a kind of twangy sound in flamenco.
No? Wow. And your fingernails are freaking huge, man. I'm noticing that.
I have acrylic. I put like the acrylic nails.
Oh, you do? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because you know, if you play 4 gigs a week, now that I'm playing, you can keep your natural nails, especially playing steel on steel string.
Interesting. Who's your favorite guitar player, man?
Jeff Beck, no doubt.
Really?
Yeah. The second would be hard to choose, but I think Jeff Beck.
Yeah. That's cool. Which is funny because you don't, when I'm listening to you, I don't, I'm sure you're influenced by him somehow, but you know, I'm not hearing Jeff Beck, which is great. I'm hearing you, you know?
Yeah. It's surprising. No, like this guy, like, yeah, I think it's my favorite of when that list changed all the time, you know,
of course. Yeah.
And maybe the second favorite would be Chet Atkins, Paco de Lucia a lot. But I think Jeff Beck, I don't know, gave me something, some special vision of making a guitar sing, you know, with not too many knowledge. He's not an intellectual guitarist. He's all emotion, no?
Yeah, very much. What he does is so unique and so difficult. I mean, it's so, you know, it's Jeff Beck.
He uses the guitar in a different way that every guitarist in the world.
Yeah.
No? I love Jeff Beck. I mean, I had the chance to meet him in Buenos Aires and talk to him for 10 minutes, no? And he was a very interesting guy.
That's cool, man. You've talked about emotions a bunch of times. How does playing guitar make you feel?
Free sometimes. Yeah, free. Or living the present. No, that's for me. It's a way to do what they call in California mindfulness.
Yeah, yeah. Just thinking
what's, for me, I don't meditate, but for me it's like meditation, no? When you play guitar.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Because you have to be present, man. You can't think about what you did 10 minutes ago. You can't think about what you're doing in 5 minutes. You can't think about you got a meeting next week or some asshole, you know, banged into your car this morning. Yeah, you got to be right there.
Yeah, man, it's the present, and that's I feel this way when I'm playing music, you know, like being in the present.
I like what you said, as they say in California. That's funny, because that is kind of unique. Like you don't hear that as much in other places. Like you'd never hear in New York City, we're going to be mindful. I don't think
that's a very Californian thing. Eh?
Yeah. Hey, man, Desert Island Discs. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
What would be your top three just for now? Because I know that changes all the time.
Still. Now, I would pick a classic, no? Elvis Presley, you know, the number one hits. Wow, that would be great. Jeff Beck, Blood by Blood.
Yeah. Great album.
Now that we are close to, I don't know, some flamenco thing, Paco de Lucia or Andres Segovia, you know, maybe some one classical, one electric. And Elvis is the king. I love to listen to singers. Huh? Inspired me a lot, even more than guitarists.
Really?
Yeah, because it's phrasing, and you know, being a good instrumentalist is not having technique; it's to have your emotions connected with your instrument, and you can learn that from vocalists. I love listening. Yeah, the way vocalists, good vocalists, good singers communicate. You can learn a lot from that and apple to and try to do it with the guitar. Try to sing. That's what I try.
Man, I love what you just said. Being a good instrumentalist is not about technique. It's about connecting emotions. That's really good, man. I like that. Tough question. Well, kind of. What's your definition of happiness?
Well, depending. No, happiness. It's a Sunday morning with my girlfriend, cooking a paella and listening to Django Reinhardt. And then if I have a guitar pretty close to play while I'm cooking the rice, no? That's happiness. I don't know. I'm very easy guy, you know?
Yeah, you Simple are. Thing. Yeah, you are easy guy. Another tough question. What do you like most about yourself?
I don't know. I'm a constant guy.
What do you mean by that?
Constant. I mean, I'm very focused. I work hard, and I'm
passion with the things that I really love, no?
Yeah. And I work, and I love practicing. I love discipline. I mean, I don't know how to say it in English, but yeah, I'm a constant guy, you know?
Constant meaning you're the same person all the time?
No, but having the same target all the time.
Okay, I gotcha. Best childhood memory?
Best childhood memory?
smelling the wood of the guitars in the conservatory.
Really? That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Do your brothers play instruments or the other brothers and sisters? You said there's four of you.
Yeah. So, yeah, my brother. My brother, he's 35. Yeah, he plays guitar very good. He's more into the classical thing and the Brazilian thing.
Is he in Spain or is he in?
He's in Paris. He got married with a Brazilian woman. They moved to Paris. Then he divorced. But he studied a lot of classical and Brazilian music.
It's so interesting that that Europeans move so freely and easily, where Americans tend to not do that.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, like, even my wife, she grew up in England and she moved to Florida and we met here.
Even the English people. Yeah,
everybody. It's like, it's a much, I think because, like, you know, there's so many. So, like, if I move from Florida to Maryland or to New York, nothing really changed. I mean, the climate, but the people are reasonably.
It's a country.
Yeah, you know. So, I mean, is, you know, maybe some slight differences, but whereas if I move from, you know, Spain to Germany, it's dramatically different. You know, and I think that's I give you guys credit because that's. It seems like Europeans are much freer to do that. And I think that's a good thing. I think you assimilate, because everybody that I've talked to says that one of the best ways to keep your mind open is by traveling.
Yeah, that's true. We conquer the West, Europeans.
Yeah.
Like, we went to America to conquer. We've been, and we have 50% of nomads blood in, no?
Yeah.
Here, especially in all the Mediterranean area, we are kind of gypsies and we're kind of Tuaregs, the people from the El Sahara, you know, people that are constantly traveling.
I think you may have about 95.
Yeah.
You may have 95%.
Oh, 98.
Hey, what was your favorite food in New York while you were living there?
That place that we mentioned off the record, it was Katz, no?
Katz's Delicatessen. So let me describe that to the listeners. Katz's Delicatessen is a Jewish deli down in the Lower East Side. It's one of the few old school delis that are still there. And it's like you go in and you get a corned beef sandwich. It's like 18 or 20 bucks, but it's like, you know, the giant sandwich you'll ever eat. You know, you can't eat the whole thing. I mean, you can maybe, but you have to be a hell of an eater. So yeah, Katz's Deli. They don't have any place like that in Spain, I don't think, do they?
Did you know the sandwich thing? It's an American thing.
Oh, is it really?
We have, you can find sandwich everywhere, but the good sandwich is in America. But we have one of the best cuisines in the world in Spain, no?
Oh, yeah.
But it's different. But the sandwich thing, like fast food, but good, it's an American thing. No?
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Jewish, they cook the meat very well also.
Yeah, it's a great deli down there. Man. Yeah. Hey, who's had the biggest influence on you musically and then personally?
I don't know. We have influence, like, from my parents, but my first teacher, the first teacher is very important. You have to, if you have a kid who wants to study something, you have to find someone, because the first connections is, are forever, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had my first teacher was really good, but I had I couldn't say that I have one person that was my big. I mean, think a lot of people in my life has been a big influence, no? But at the same time, I could say that I kind of made myself.
Good. Yeah, that's a fair answer, man. What's the most important thing your dad taught you?
Honesty. Yeah.
Are your parents still around?
Sorry?
Are your parents still around? Are they still alive?
Yeah. They're
great. That's great. And how about your mom? What's the most important thing she taught you?
My mother. My mother, more, we would say, empathy. Something that I really didn't like when I was a child. No?
Yeah.
But that's something interesting. My mother, she's very empathic with everybody. No, she listens to all everybody's problems and that kind of thing. No, and when I was a kid, I hate that. Like, say, Mom, like, stop. But it's a good quality.
Yeah, no? It is. It is. That's great, man. Do you have any hobbies outside of music?
I cook. I love cooking. Yeah, I love cooking. And I used to have a lot of hobbies more when I was in my 20s, no more. But now I think that I more focus on just music.
Yeah.
And cooking is something beautiful for me as a communication.
What do you like to cook?
I cook my Spanish thing, no, my traditional, the thing that my mom and my grandmother, they teach me that. But yeah, I'm more Mediterranean, more into rices and risotto and paella and all the Spanish cuisine. I'm not an international cook, but I love cooking. I love food. It's a good experience. You can learn a lot from a community or from a social or from a country through food.
Dude, you're making me hungry, man.
Oh yeah, me too.
Hey, what's
it's almost time to have a snack.
Oh yeah, for you especially. What's the favorite place you traveled?
My favorite place. I used to like South America a lot for a while, but I don't know, because I've been traveling a lot. So now I think New York would be the perfect city for a weekend.
Yeah, it is. It is a perfect city for a weekend.
Yeah.
Two more questions, man. Any regrets? Is there any regrets that you have, things that you wish you did, but you didn't do them at the time?
No, I don't regret anything, man. I made some mistakes, yeah, but I made my best. I think I made my best. No, even if I made some mistakes, no, I don't. The good thing about life is that it gives you lessons all the time. No,
and that's
the
good thing.
Even in the bad moment, even in the bad moments. So. No, I don't regret anything. I didn't do anything bad. I made some mistakes, some natural things. But I think I'm pretty happy the way my life is now. Yeah.
Very cool, man. Last question. Diego, what has been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And has this change been intentional? Or has it just been a natural part of aging?
The last thing, let me remember how was I. No, you know, I know more myself, and I know that I'm a human, and I have good things, bad things. I accept it. No, because when you're young, you are brave, and when you're 25. It's like you think you are, the center of the creation. But when you come close to the 40s, late 30s. Yeah, I think I started being a real adult at 35, 36.
That's cool.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was an adult before, but I made a good point that I'm learning even from my good things, but also from my bad things. I know my bad things, and I can detect, you know, the bad things.
Very cool, man. Listen, man, first of all, I want to thank you for everything, especially for all the great music you make. And let me tell people where they could find you and listen to your music and support you. And thank you, man. This is really kind of you. Okay. So first of all, it's Diego Garcia. Look up El Twanguero, and I'm going to spell that L-E-L Twanguero, T-W-A-N-G-U-E-R-O. He's living in LA right now, and he is the end. This is early January. This is dropping, and the end of this month, he'll start touring California. The new record, or the last record, is called Electric Sunset. Please check it out. It's really good. And you can find him online at twanguero.com. Again, it's T-W-A-N-G-U-E-R-O. And for Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, it's El Twanguero. And also, he doesn't do a lot of these, but when he's off the road, if the connection is good, he does give lessons on Skype. And I, you know, to me, it would make sense if you're looking to learn electric Latin guitar. This is no better guy perhaps in the entire world to work with. So if you are an intermediate or advanced student that wants to broaden your horizons and either learn more about electric Latin guitar or specialize in it, or you want some constructive criticism, send Diego an email, let him know what you're doing and what you're looking to accomplish. And he'll get back to you if it's a fit, you guys could work together. Let me just give you his email address. It's El Twanguero, ELTWANGUERO@gmail.com. And check him out on tour. Honestly, this is like really cool music, man. It's really different. And that's it, man. Any final words of wisdom?
Well, I think I enjoy a lot your interview. To be honest, it's man, you're a super, super cool guy. I want to say hi to everybody who's listening. You guys have to listen. Everyone loves guitar. You have pretty good stuff. I was checking out. Trevor, you have pretty good stuff there.
Yeah, I've had a lot of guests. Lucky.
Yeah, because you can see the other side of some guitarists that I know, even from Pompey God that I know. I was listening to his interview, and I discovered a few new things.
He's funny as hell, that guy. We would laugh the whole interview. I laughed so hard in the beginning of the interview. I didn't think I'd be able to do the interview. And it's a long story, but anyway, man, listen, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. I hope to see you. I hope you're coming down to Florida, or maybe I'll see you in New York sometime. I'd love to see you playing. You're just a joy to listen to your music, man.
Thank you
for your time. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, please share it with a friend on your social media channels. Thanks again to Diego Garcia for spending time with us. I really appreciate it. Everybody, check him out online. It's eltwanguero.com. And make sure you go to everyoneloversguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.